The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Rick Steves is an expert on European travel. You've seen him on TV. You've heard his radio program. What you may not know about Rick Steves is that he is an accomplished musician himself. He grew up in a musical household, and he knows a lot about music in addition to knowing a lot about travel and a lot about Europe. Thank you so much for making time to chat today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
So I guess, you know, right out of the gate, I want to know, what are the best European cities for attending classical music performances?
Well, you know, Europeans really are into classical music across the board. So you can hear great classical, live classical music all over Europe. But the cities that come to mind to me are Vienna, Salzburg, and Prague. These are just wonderful places, and they have a busy, schedule. And while the season generally goes from fall to spring, the summers are filled with special events, to help employ musicians that want the employment and also to entertain travelers who are coming through.
So would this be on every level? In other words, just sort of the small street level kind of things, as well as the big festivals and big, more organized things in concert halls?
Oh, yeah. And I'm always impressed by how many concerts they're putting on in Salzburg and in Vienna. And I'm also impressed by how affordable the concerts are in Prague. When you're in Prague, every day there are two or three or four beautiful classical concerts. And what's really fun is they are in gorgeous venues. I just love, you know, listening to Baroque music in a Baroque palace. And I also love to go to a concert for $20 instead of $60.
Absolutely. You said you can hear music year-round, but is there sort of the sweet spot, the very best time of year to travel if you really want to hear sort of the most famous concert series?
You know, if you're a sophisticate and if you're really good with your appreciation of classical music, you'll probably want to go not in the summer, but in the fall or the winter, when the major orchestras are having their real seasons. But for light enjoyment of classical music, summer is really vibrant. I would remind people, you kind of have to make a choice a lot of times. Do you want people in powdered wigs and leotards, or do you want really good musicians?
Right. Well, there is, you know, you raise a really good point. There really is kind of a divide between the tourist presentations, like you say, the guys in the powdered wigs and the leotards, versus the really good quality music.
Yeah, it's fun to hear Vivaldi's Four Seasons in a Venetian palace with a bunch of people with powdered wigs, but it's also fun to go to the opera in Vienna and hear the Vienna Philharmonic in the pit.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a way, or in your opinion, a best way to find out what's going on and help plan what you'd like to hear or what you'd like to see when you're going to particular cities, like an online resource or other kinds of resources?
Oh, yeah. They love to, book tickets in advance. And if you're going to go to the Wagner Festival in Bregenz or whatever, you'll get on the website long in advance and book your tickets and build your tour around that. To be honest, I usually just travel oblivious to what concerts are where until I'm there. And then when I get into town, I pick up the local entertainment guide, which lists all the events coming up. And I'm generally able to find tickets to what I want to go to. There's just so much happening, and that's, to me, you can be flexible, and unless you really want to see a particular performance, in which case you'd want to book it in advance, if you're open to just enjoying live classical music as it comes your way, there's no shortage of events, and you can enjoy great music all summer long in your trip, just coming in. And I just say, as soon as you arrive, drop by the tourist information office or check with the online sources of information or whatever, and commit yourself to some concerts. Also remember, all over Europe, they have a very creative and big-hearted sort of approach of making music affordable to students and to travelers and to people who don't have a lot of money by holding seats until the day of the show, or by having standing room available right at the day of the show. And this really is an interest in keeping music accessible. I know in Vienna they have a wonderful festival where they do all these greatest performances, video projections of them in the city hall, sort of the park in front of the city hall, and they've got a couple of thousands of chairs set up, a great sound system, beautiful projection, wonderful ambience there in the under the stars in the summer with the you know, all the music lovers of Vienna gathered together, and they offer this for free, and they do it because they want to reinvigorate sort of the legions of people that support classical music by exposing it to new people that might not be season ticket holders yet, you know, so we can enjoy that. I know last time I was in Vienna, the opera was sold out, but they were projecting it live right outside, and they had comfortable seats set up, and people were just dropping by and enjoying that in a casual kind of way. So there's this fun kind of let's keep music accessible and let's just celebrate it, and you don't need to be wealthy to enjoy beautiful classical music in Europe as you travel.
Mm-hmm. So you raised a good point that I wanted to ask you about. What about accessibility? You know, sounds like some of those outdoor venues, you can just sort of pull up a chair or your wheelchair if that's what you're in. But what about the venues themselves? Would that be typically accessible for someone who maybe needs a little extra help or has a wheelchair or a walker?
Yeah. I mean, when you travel in Europe, Suzanne, a lot of things are intentionally inaccessible. I mean, a lot of my favorite castles and hill towns and so on are put in places and designed a certain way so you can't get in there. But concert halls are never that way. Concert halls are designed to be accessible, and I find that they have retrofitted the older halls to accommodate people's needs who don't walk well, who need an elevator, who are in wheelchairs or whatever. So that's not a concern. In fact, I think across the board in Europe, people who don't walk well are treated very thoughtfully at different venues.
That's great. Now, one thing I know people here, particularly people who are a little bit intimidated to begin with about going to classical music performances here, I could see being intimidated about the concert etiquette. You know, you go to a concert, people are always agonizing over when to clap and is standing ovation acceptable or expected? You know, how do you dress and all of that? What is the concert etiquette like in European venues as compared to here?
Well, I think the key is just to be aware of what the locals around you are doing. I find that from an attire point of view, it's more formal in the formal season from fall, winter, spring, and it's more casual in the summer. You'll feel very, you know, you want to, if you're traveling, you put on whatever you got that's as nice as possible when you go out to a nice concert hall. But there's no concern about, do we need a coat and a tie or a fancy dress or heels or anything like that when you go to these nice concert halls in the summer. You would feel underdressed, however, if you went to these same places I've found in the off-season when locals retake the concert halls. When you're in a concert hall in the summer, half of the people there are travelers. In the winter, it really feels like it's a special event for the local people. And in that case, you'll want to be more tuned into how formal should you be dressed. As far as etiquette of when to clap, when to stand, all that sort of stuff, I'm as insecure about that as the next traveler. It changes from culture to culture, but I find that if you just don't be the first one clapping, because then you can you can really make a mistake. But you know, it's just you look around and you follow the crowds, and it's kind of fun to go, oh, this is how they do it here. I love the way they call for an encore and how they'll whether they stand up or sit down or holler, bravo or whatever. It's just you kind of get caught up in the moment, and that's fun.
Mm-hmm. So it's okay to yell out bravo if someone else is starting to yell out bravo.
And unless they're a tourist.
Okay. Now, what about things like free programs? Do you get a free program? I've seen some venues where they sell programs.
Yeah. My experience is you generally get a free program.
Mm-hmm.
And that would vary from country to country, too.
Mm-hmm. And what other considerations should a classical music lover make when they're, you know, maybe going to a concert hall or thinking about which, you know, this one or that one? How would you weigh that on your Rick Steves scale?
Well, I enjoy the scene. I like to get there early and just watch all of that strata of society together enjoying La Scala or wherever they are. And you'll find all over Europe, it's a great opportunity to just see, you know, the finer sort of end of society all dressed up and getting together to enjoy a great concert. I find that is almost that's a big part of the whole event and the experience for me, as it is for other people. When you go to the opera house in Paris, you'll notice that the foyer is just as big and just as glamorous as the theater itself, or where You'll notice it's designed for people come to show off, to see and to be seen. Mm-hmm. So enjoy that aspect of it for sure. I think that's it's just one opportunity to kind of be a temporary European. I love this opportunity in my travels to feel like I'm not a tourist looking at cliches on stage, but that I am a temporary local enjoying a slice of beautiful culture. Also, be aggressive at finding what special opportunities there are for you. If you're a pipe organ enthusiast, there's plenty of opportunities to hear beautiful pipe organ concerts, and there are opportunities even to play a pipe organ. When I'm in Paris, for instance, I love to almost, you can almost sit on the bench with the greatest working pipe organist in Europe right now, Daniel Roth at Saint-Sulpice Cathedral. And if you have a good guidebook, this is something I pride myself in finding for my guidebooks, is little tips like this. You go to Saint-Sulpice Cathedral, and after the first Mass on Sunday morning, a little door in the back of the nave opens up, and organ aficionados slip in, and then they kind of scamper like little 16th notes up this tight spiral staircase until they get into this organ loft. And then you walk by this musty old behind-the-organ zone where you have these big bellows that were powered by men treading on these, 18th century versions of a Stairmaster, and that was what powered this huge organ before the time of electricity. And then you go around the corner and you see a bust of Bach, and you see thumbtacked onto the wall a list of organists that have warmed that bench that goes back to Vidor and Dupré and so on. 200 years of great organists that have worked right there. And then you're greeted by Daniel Roth, the current organist at Saint-Sulpice in Paris. And, he plays a little concert for the guests that come up there. And this is free. He plays a little concert, and you can sit there watching him and his assistants pulling out all the stops and going through all their fancy music. And you can see the funky little mirror setup he's got so he can see the priest down there. And you can look out from the balcony down at the parishioners below you and just get this sense that this gorgeous organ music is filling the sails that power the nave of that church with gorgeous music. And then you're right there watching the organist play the greatest pipe organ concert in all of Europe, I think. Wow. And it's free on Sunday morning. Wow. But that's an example of something you just need to be in the know about.
Mm-hmm. So seriously, you just wait for that little door to open and you just go in with all the other people?
That's it. I've done it four or five times. I've done it twice with my TV crew, and he is a gracious man, and he carries on the tradition that the great organists before him have carried on of welcoming travelers into the loft, so mm-hmm. welcoming local organ enthusiasts also, and to watch him perform in that incredible loft.
Wow. Are there any other little secret places where you can have something up close and personal like that?
Well, that's awfully good. In a more of a pop setting, of course, you go to the pubs in Ireland and hear all the traditional music played in the pubs. Mm-hmm. And that's where you just feel the warmth and the vibrancy of that culture. To see the musicians performing together and how they communicate with each other and how they kind of create a whole atmosphere and all of the tumultuous history of Ireland in the last century comes out in the laments. And you think about the heritage of Ireland and you see how it's carried forward in this form of music, the traditional music in the Irish pubs. That's free, and that's just a real magical experience, and it's you're not going to find it in your hotel. You're going to have to get out there and track down the good local pub and be there at the right hour. Boy, that's a lot of fun. To be in Spain, you enjoy, of course, flamenco culture, and tourists typically go to a tourist flamenco hall and gather together with six busloads of tourists, taking their flash photographs and having their Kodak moment, and with the guys who sell the wine in the back of the room going "Olé," so everybody else goes "Oh, Olé," and that's not bad. I mean, I enjoy those concerts too. But then on the way home, if you just take a left turn instead of a right turn, you can find yourself in a bar that's just filled with Andalusians who really just have in their blood this soul and this passion of flamenco culture, and you have spontaneous impromptu flamenco in the bars, and to see that erupting spontaneously is really great. To be in Portugal and to enjoy the fado music, this is just gripping, bluesy, fisherman's widow's music, and to see that in the characteristic eateries of Lisbon on the back streets, performed for locals rather than in tourist clubs for tourists, that's a beautiful experience. I was just in up in outside of Bergen in Norway at Trolltagen to see the home of Edvard Grieg. And I'm so inspired by seeing the place where great musicians or great artists were inspired. And to be able to go to the place on the fjord where Edvard Grieg worked and to see his little cabin where he had an upright piano and he had his little desk and to see his pens and his music and his his inspirational view of the fjord, and to think, wow, he wrote Wedding Day at Trolltagen right here, and then to go into the concert hall and hear a local musician give the lunchtime concert there at Trolltagen to celebrate beautiful romantic Norwegian music. That's a beautiful experience. There's something special about hearing the music performed where it was inspired and created. I really love that, and you can do that in your travels if you like.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about the up close and personal with the organist, but, you know, there's another aspect of concert going that is the tradition of going back to the green room after a concert. And that's pretty common here to be able to go back and meet and chat. It's sort of expected. You know, you talked about the little door that opens. Well, that's what
right.
happens here. Is that the norm in Europe, too?
I have not encountered that as a tourist coming and going. I mean, probably, you know, locals who are supporters of the local music scene and so on have that in, but mm-hmm. I've not seen that in Europe. It may be there, but I've not seen it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are some of your, favorite orchestras or favorite performances or concert halls that you've gone to in Europe that you think, wow, this is just worth it just to see this magnificent place or just to sit in this beautiful hall?
Yeah. Well, I love to hear pipe organs mm-hmm. filling a church as they have for centuries. And there's a church in Harlem, just outside of Amsterdam, that gives weekly pipe organ concerts that I find really inspirational. The entire wall is filled by all these pipes, and to think of a time when there was no recorded music and so on, and people would get together there and share the great music, and to think of the heritage of Protestant and Catholic Europe and how north of that boundary there was more music, and south of that boundary there was more big paintings and glorious statues. And to see how music really showed itself, or people's spiritual passions showed itself in music, I think that's really exciting. To go to the great opera halls in Europe, La Scala, it's always amazing to me to be able to go to La Scala and be there, you know, sort of in the heartland of opera country, and to enjoy an opera in Milano. One of my favorite things in Europe is just to go to little chamber music concerts that are very intimate, mm-hmm. And again, to remember this was how people got together and shared their culture and enjoyed music in the old days. It's really fun to put the music into the context of when it was produced, and you'll find chamber music concerts all over Europe are put on in beautiful halls and very affordable. And again, in the summertime, they are there to help employ musicians, because musicians are always looking for, you know, a way to pay the bills, and also to give tourists a little dose of the local culture and a chance to hear it in the beautiful venues. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, the major symphonies or the major orchestras, I'm not a good one to ask about that. I just don't know that much about, you know, should I go to the Berlin or Paris or Amsterdam or whatever. Uh-huh. But as a traveler, I'm always aware that there is a beautiful opportunity to enjoy music as you go.
What about kids? I mean, is it okay to bring children to concert halls? Is there sort of a ballpark minimum age that you should consider if you're bringing a child to a concert?
I think Europeans look down on kids that aren't well behaved. I mean, Europeans live in tight quarters, and a lot of times people trying to get away from kids when they go to a nice restaurant or a nice concert hall. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids are welcome, but there's not a lot of, it's not cute when a kid is making, mm-hmm. is being unruly and you know, it's sort of inappropriate to have a child if they can't sit quietly through this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Europeans are a little bit more, less embracing of children in a fancy concert hall.
Mm-hmm. So do you mind talking a little bit about your own musical background?
Not at all.
You're a pianist?
Yeah, well, I'm not a great pianist, but I love piano music. I taught piano for years. My dad used to import the best pianos in the world from Germany and from Austria. Hmm. And my first time in Europe was when my dad dragged me there as a 14-year-old kid, because he was importing the German Steinway, the Grotrian Steinweg from Braunschweig. and harpsichords, Sperrhacki harpsichords from Passau, and the Burzendorfers from Vienna. And, you know, these pianos are handmade, and they each has a personality, and they're just glorious pianos. And to go there and to see them made, and to meet the families who've made them for generations, and to see the pride of the workmen doing their little thing, just aging the wood or treating the felt or voicing the piano or whatever. And I remember going to the factory in Burzendorfer, and they bragged how many man hours go into each piano. They said, we produce 2 pianos per man per year. Mm-hmm. And there's no sense of an assembly line. These pianos were birthed in cells of a former monastery. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, I think Yamaha produced more pianos in 1 month than Burzendorfer produced in 100 years. And my dad would sell a Burzendorfer to somebody who really appreciated a fine piano in Seattle. And my dad would be their piano tuner, so he would know their musical taste. My dad would actually fly to Vienna, and Burzendorfer would line up 6 beautiful, shiny black grands, and my dad would have me play each one, and my dad would analyze the personality of the tone, because each one was different. He would choose the one that he thought fit the musical taste of the pianist in Seattle who bought it from him, and my dad would autograph the sounding board, and then they'd put it in a container and ship it to Seattle, and the person would have that handmade piano from Vienna that they had chosen. And it was just a beautiful process. And I remember seeing that, even as a little teeny bopper, it gave me an appreciation of this European, you know, passion for quality and classical culture and fine workmanship. And it was really a fun introduction. And I also got to play a lot of incredible pianos. I mean, to lay into a 9'6" Imperial Burzendorfer grand piano and have all that, they have a whole extra octave, you know, below the bottom A of a regular piano. Mm-hmm. And they have a lid over that, so you don't actually play those keys. You can play them if you open the lid, but they all vibrate, sympathetically with what you're playing, and it just gives it a incredible sort of foundation. And that is one of the great experiences for me musically ever, was to be in Vienna at the Burzendorfer factory and play all those great pianos.
Wow. That is like touching a little piece of history. That's amazing.
It sure was.
So
yeah.
Do you still play?
Oh, yeah. I taught piano for, I think, 6 or 8 years, and I really enjoyed teaching piano. I fully expected to be a piano teacher all my life. I loved it. And I had a recital hall here. I had a piano studio where I taught, and a couple of friends of mine would teach there. And then we had a recital hall in the middle, which was designed for our recitals. And slowly I started using my piano recital hall for a travel lecture hall. And I had I painted a white square on the wall, which was where I projected my slides back then to give my travel talks. And I would have this arty little bit of music, staff and eighth notes and all that kind of stuff to decorate it when I wasn't showing slides. And slowly my recital hall became a travel lecture hall. And I remember I finally had to decide, okay, Rick, do one or the other. Are you going to be a piano teacher or a travel teacher? And I just thought, well, I'd love to be a piano teacher, but I would love more to be a travel teacher. So I gave up my students when I was 25 years old, and I wrote my first book, Europe Through the Back Door. That was 1980. And ever since then, I've been traveling and teaching travel professionally and playing the piano just for kicks.
Well, that's amazing. That's really wonderful, and certainly appreciate that you went into the travel end of things, because I know I have personally benefited very much from all of your wonderful teaching. So,
yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom about traveling and hearing great classical music, and thanks very much for making time.
My pleasure. Happy travels, and enjoy your music.